Good morning, everyone. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Dearest Master,
Blessed Mother,
Saints and sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King,
reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Listen to my heart song. Listen to my heart song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen to my heart song. Listen to my heart song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen to my heart song. Listen to my heart song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Listen to my heart song. Listen to my heart song. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. I will never forget thee. I will never forsake thee. Om Shri Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai 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 Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram.
Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om 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 Shri Ram, Jai Ram, 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 Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai
Reading from Master's Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. The soul qualities that make man godlike. And the first is fearlessness. Fearlessness, as mentioned first, because it is impregnable rock upon which the house of spiritual life must be erected. Fearlessness means faith in God, faith in His protection, His justice, His wisdom, His mercy, His love, His omnipresence. The spiritually intrepid devotee is mightily armed against any foe that obstructs advancement. Disbelief and doubt, delusion's first line of attack, are similarly routed by undaunted faith. Disbelief and doubt, delusion's first line of attack, are summarily routed by the undaunted faith, as are desires and all of their enticements that bluff with threats of unhappiness if not embraced. Fear robs man of the indomitable ability of his soul, disrupting nature's harmonious workings emanating from the source of divine power within. Fear causes physical, mental, and spiritual disturbances. Extreme fright can even stop the heart and bring sudden death. Long-continued anxieties give rise to psychological complexes and chronic nervousness. Fear ties the mind and heart, or feeling nature, to the external man, causing the consciousness to be identified with mental or physical nervousness, thus keeping the soul concentrated on the ego, the body, and the objects of fear. One note here is that in our modern day society, at a time when in many ways we are physically safer, we have more of the body's needs looked after in terms of clothing, in terms of housing, in terms of food, and yet anxiety rings at an all-time high, it seems like. And there are many articles and much talk about people living in a state of chronic anxiety. And the reason is because we have become more and more dissociated from our true spiritual being and reliance upon God, and more focused upon the things of the world, the things of the body, the things of the senses. And as a result, the fear complexes have grown instead of reduced as we might think, as the bodily needs and safety are really attended to as they never have been before in recorded history. Back to Master. The devotee should discard all misgivings, realizing them to be stumbling blocks that hinder his concentration on the impenetrable peace of the soul. In olden times in India, and in Christian tradition also, it was customary for sages to seek solitary abode in the forests, deserts, and mountains for uninterrupted meditation. These remote areas, free of civilized invasion, were the natural habitat of such creatures as snakes, scorpions, and predatory wild animals. In India, even in the present age, we grew up with inspiring tales of eyewitness accounts of reclusive saints whose sole companions were cobras and scorpions, placidly seeking warmth against the saint's body, or fearsome tigers become pussycats. And who was not thrilled to the legend of St. Francis of Assisi, who tamed the bloody lust of the wolf Gavio? Beasts are conscious of the divine vibrations emanating from saints, because God-knowing saints see the Lord in everything, not in imagination, but realization. They neither harbor fears nor arouse defensive fear in the Lord's creature kingdom. For the unenlightened, the best advice is caution, along with courage, fearlessness and spirit, without rashly exposing oneself unnecessary risks or to conditions that may arouse apprehensions. Everyone is given ample opportunities, without willfully creating them, to demonstrate courage and prove the power of faith. Death is perhaps the ultimate challenge of faith in mortal man. Fear of this inevitability is foolish. It comes only once in a lifetime, and after it has come, the experience is over, without having affected our true identity or diminished in any way our real being. Illness also is a gauntlet tossed at the feet of faith. An ill person should try earnestly to rid himself of his malady. Then, even if doctors proclaim there is no hope, he should remain tranquil, for fear shuts the eye of faith to the omnipotent and compassionate divine presence. Then, even if doctors proclaim there is no hope, he should remain tranquil, for fear shuts the eyes of faith to the omnipotent, compassionate, divine presence. I have worked with several people who are in the last stages of life, dying, proclaimed by the doctors. And invariably, if there is fear, it is fear for the future by the individual. One woman comes to mind who was in the late stages of cancer. She was undergoing chemo treatment, and they said that she only had a few weeks to live, and this was true. This is how it turned out. Her skin was a brownish green from the chemo treatment. She had no hair, no eyebrows, nothing like that. And when I met with her, she had some things that she regretted in her life, that she had not forgiven herself for. And so we worked on forgiveness and letting go. And through the process that we went through, she was able to let go of the things that she had done that were still clinging on to her, and she was clinging on to them. And as a result of this, she felt free. But the one thing that she voiced was she was afraid that what if the pain should get worse? What if it should get to be too much for her? And I ask her each time, are you all right now, today? And each time she would say yes. But yet this fear persisted for the future. And yet her condition was very pitiable in the way that it was. And many people would have said, if I were in her condition, I wouldn't be able to survive. I wouldn't be able to take it. And I found this to be true in every instance, that each individual who has come into these dire straits has sufficient grace to meet whatever they encounter. And it is inevitably the fear of the future that it won't be there, that the grace won't be there, the strength won't be there. And what God showed me was that for each circumstance that we meet, there is sufficient and more than sufficient grace to meet that circumstance. So we need never have any fear, even something that should seem absolutely awful. We read about situations in people's lives, and we wonder, how do they go on? How do they take it? And the truth is that there is a grace that is open to that individual that may not be immediately available to you who are distant from that situation, because you don't need it in the moment. You're not consciously aware of it being present. But if you were to have to encounter such a situation, those wellsprings of grace would immediately open to you because the need is there. Therefore, the supply is there. If we have that infinite faith in the supply coming to us, then we need never fear for any future condition. We always know that God is with us at every instance, that God is more powerful than this world of His creation. And therefore, we can rise above whatever circumstances we are placed in. And the reason people become depressed, despondent, and hopeless is because they are not consciously connecting with that divine source. Their fear shuts the door to grace. So this is the great lesson for us to learn, is to keep that door wide open to grace, to always feel that from behind us there is a constant flow of divinity. And there is great strength, there is great wisdom, there is light, there is joy, there is love, there is compassion, there is everything that we need to be able to meet the circumstances of our life and to go beyond them and to put ourselves into touch with the almighty, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent force that God is. Therefore, there is never any need for fear. And that this is the nature, this is the source of how we overcome. Illness is also a gauntlet tossed at the feet of faith. An ill person should try earnestly to rid himself of his malady. Then, even if doctors proclaim there is no hope, he should remain tranquil, for fear shuts the eyes of faith to the omnipotent, compassionate divine presence. Instead of indulging anxiety, he should affirm, "I am ever safe in the fortress of thy loving care." A fearless devotee, succumbing to the incurable disease, concentrates on the Lord and becomes ready for liberation from the bodily prison in a glorious afterlife in the astral world. Thereby, he advances closer to the goal of supreme liberation in his next life. A man who dies in terror, having surrendered to despair his faith in God and remembrance of his immortal nature, carries with him into his next incarnation that bleak pattern of fear and weakness. This imprint may well attract him to similar calamities, a continuation of a karmic lesson not yet learned. The heroic devotee, however, though he may lose the battle with death, yet wins the war of freedom. All men are meant to realize that soul consciousness can triumph over every external disaster. When subconscious fears repeatedly invade the mind, in spite of one's strong mental resistance, it is an indication of some deep-seated karmic pattern. The devotee must strive even harder to divert his attention by infusion of his consciousness, of his conscious mind, with thoughts of courage. The devotee must strive even harder to divert his attention by infusion of his conscious mind with thoughts of courage. Further and most important, he should confide himself completely into God's trustworthy hands. To be fit for self-realization, man must be fearless. And this brings us to the topic of today, which is pilgrimage. And in order to take pilgrimage, we have to start out with a fearless intention that we wish to go to a holy place, a sacred place. The nature of pilgrimage is designed for each individual. There are those who have gone to places of pilgrimage, both here in America, in other places of the world, and in India, with the intention of raising the consciousness. The journey itself can be a struggle and can be difficult. You can meet difficulties along the road just getting to the place of pilgrimage. And this is many times the case through the weather, through food, through sickness, through the internal fears being brought up through this pilgrimage. You are automatically just in entering upon a pilgrimage. You are upon the spiritual path in an intensified way. And through this intensified journey, you come across all the things that are internally and externally designed perfectly for you. They challenge you. And this comes as a great surprise to many devotees as they go to a place of pilgrimage. They expect, as Mother expected when she went to India and to Anandashram, to rise up in a state of peace, to attain that permanency of being that is the Sahaja Samadhi state. That is the intention, that is the hope for outcome. And yet when the devotee gets there and they are thrown in with the wolves, so to speak, and you have them nipping at your heels and biting at you and barking at you, and all the fears and all the different anxieties come up inside of you, and you want to be anywhere except where you are at. And you think, what a loathsome mistake I've made by coming here. And there's great surprise in this because, as I said, the hoped-for outcome is to have the steadiness of heart and peace. And you think perhaps you are not ready, or perhaps the path is too difficult. But this is not the case. Master said in the original lessons, and this was later edited out of the lessons, that when you go to India, you should visit her saints. Because at these places where saints have resided or where they reside today, we're listening to Amici's chants before the service, and she is a great living saint today. And to get the blessings of such a saint is a great privilege. And it greatly enhances your spiritual development. But it also brings tests to you. And so to enter upon a spiritual pilgrimage requires great faith. Now, fearlessness does not automatically mean that you have no fear, in the sense that you have to overcome the fears to call upon that grace. In order to demonstrate courage doesn't mean you have no fear. It means you feel fear and you do what is right anyway. And through those experiences, by going through the fear and calling upon God and opening yourself even wider to the grace coming into you, that's how you come into a state of fearlessness. Not because the situations in your life change, but because you have changed. Grace has changed you. It's come into your heart, it's come into your body and your soul, and it's lifted you beyond the things that previously have made you feel afraid. So it is not a state where we go to that we feel no fear, that there are no problems. As a great devotee in India told me, in India when they say there's no problem, which is a common saying there, there's always a problem. And this is true. This is true. So do not think that your outer circumstances are going to just become a bed of roses, of rose petals that are just soft and easy all the way. This is not the way that it is. It's not the way that it is. And yet there's some part of us who feels that it should be that way. And there are those people who can become very resentful and very fearful, because they feel betrayed. They feel like life has somehow betrayed them when it offers up some difficulties, either for them or people that they care about. And this is a wrong lesson to take away from the things that come to us. when we enter upon a pilgrimage, and our very life itself is a pilgrimage. Right where you are, right where you live, right where you work, the people that you love, the people that you encounter throughout the day, these are your spiritual pilgrimage. And not to see them as such is the fault of the seer, not what is seen. There's not been some cosmic mistake made placing you exactly where you're at. You are exactly where you're supposed to be. And when you accept that, and accept the idea of pilgrimage coming into your life, that this is perfect for you, and that if you keep your mind on God, you will be drawn through whatever difficulty you are in, and you will be taken into that higher state of heavenly consciousness. Even before you taste of physical death, you will come into that heavenly kingdom, where the kingdom of heaven is within you, and it is always with you, whether you realize it or not. Today we have Rahul back with us, fresh from India, and he's going to show us some slides and talk about his pilgrimage there.
Yeah. Maybe a little talking, you pretty much covered it. That's very true.
But I haven't covered yours, so why don't you sit here, and we have the, I think it's up on the television, where I'm just going to ask you to...
First of all, it's nice to be back. Very nice to be back.
David? You'll need to tell the people on that, but you want to sit down for a second to tell them how to get to the website. All the pictures are on the website, I'm sure.
We're going to wire you up, and hopefully you're not electrocuted.
For those people listening on the okay. Crossing Watch, you can go to the Crossing Watch website, go to David's.
You can stay there.
And underneath that is a audio page.
Where's the play button right here, huh?
You go to David's page, and then you go to David's audio page. And on the left side of his big picture, there's a thing called temporary links. So that will take you to the pictures for Raoul's slideshow. And unfortunately, I put them in reverse order, so you'll have to start at the bottom of the left page and go to the top as he's speaking.
Okay. First of all, everything David was talking, it's just the truth. It's exactly right. It wasn't an easy pilgrimage. It has its moments of trial, and has its moments where I wanted to leave, but I knew that I had to stay. That he had a purpose in mind. This starts from the back, so this is I think this is February 25th, the grand opening of the hospital, Satchidananda Hospital. And there's Swamiji, and you can't see Dr. J. Dr. J is sitting next to the man in the blue shirt. He's from Texas, USA, and he's very proud of that. He said he had to be here because he had to represent the USA for cause most of the money, devotion came from donations came from the USA, and he gave a speech. Swami Muktananda spoke on behalf of Swami Satchidananda, which was a beautiful speech. I don't know if you got that speech or not. I emailed you that speech. It was a great speech. There's Sri Krishna and his assistants. There's Swami on the left, right behind, right next to Swamiji is Swami Sanyananda. Let's go to the next one. The plus. Okay, there's a reception room. Okay.
The minus sign to go back.
Okay. Okay, there's a reception. Now, unfortunately, I don't have pictures of before and after, but those of you who have seen a hospital before, I mean, just a rundown building. And now it's complete except for the third floor, which it's open now for sure. All three floors are open now. There's one of the rooms. It's state-of-the-art equipment. They have dialysis machine, eye surgery machine. They have everything. It's really amazing. It's really, really amazing. Let's see. Plus. The big plus. Yeah. There you go. Okay. And there's the entrance, I believe, to the eye clinic. And as you can see, it's the floor is just tile and really, really nice.
The hospital is run for people who are very low income. There's no charge, and then there's a sliding fee scale going up for people who can afford it. Then will be charged, and they hope to be able to have it self-sufficient. But all the funds, I think Kathy may have made the first donation because they were just speaking about it the first time I was in India, and Kathy was there, and she wrote a check to the ashram specified for the hospital, and that may have been the first money he's donated for it. So that was 1999, and now we're 2008, so it's
not too long, really, when you think of how big a project it was.
And Dr. J said that now they have a ex-military man in charge, a general, to keep making sure that the money situation is balanced out. Because, like he said, it's designed for the people who don't have any money, poverty level, to free medical service, and the people who can afford something, they can make sure they pay, which is really a good idea.
Question.
Yeah.
Do the facilities, does that include the training of the staff so that you have upgraded?
Oh yeah, yeah. They have a fine medical staff, fine doctors, and fine nurses. And I don't know what their what their income is, but I'm sure it's not that high. A lot of it's just voluntary work. And they also have a free clinic. You can't see it right now; it's on the back. We'll see it in a minute. The operation theater.
To
there it is.
Last time I was here, it was all concrete on the inside. So to see it finished like this was great.
It's just look at it. It's amazing. And there's the I think that's the free outpatient clinic, outpatient.
So when we were there in November, December to now is.
Yeah, I mean the work is it's a beautiful hospital. There's the I believe that's the entrance. No, that's the laboratory there. There's a. Let me just tell you a quick story about this. At the grand opening of the hospital, before Swamiji got there, was just a mass of people just around it, in the entrance. And Sri Krishna and all the devotees went right here on the far right. There's a bunch of chairs, and he sat there. And the first thing he did was sing Om Sri Ram Jai Jai Ram the whole time before Swamiji arrived, just to keep the. There's a pharmacy. Pharmacy section. And there's the, I believe, the free clinics on the right-hand side. You can't see it. But it's just amazing.
Is the hospital to the left?
Yeah. Yeah, it's this way. Dr. J was very proud. So, but let's go back for a second here. Let's see. Minus and back. Oh, this minus. Okay. And then go. We go.
There
we go. Pause.
You gotta pause. You gotta pause it first, and then hit the minus sign.
Okay.
You know where the pause is.
Yeah. Got it. Then hit the plus minus sign.
No, you're still not paused yet. Lower right hand, very bottom, right hand side.
Right here.
Yep. Now stop it. See, it says still. Now go back with the minus.
Okay.
And watch your. Don't press the other button. No, not there. I think this one.
Okay.
It might work the other, yeah.
I see. That's a nonchalant there. Okay, there. You can't see the entrance there. There's an entrance on the left-hand side. When Swamiji left the hospital, we took him to the hospital, a grand tour. with his assistants and Swami Muktananda and myself to every room, surgery room. And as we were leaving, they brought him into the van and they maneuvered him to the van to get him in the seat. It took a little while to get him in the seat. And that was from here to where David's at. And we looked at each other. We hadn't made eye contact for about 3 minutes. And it was unplanned darshan. It was the best darshan I got from him. It was like love, compassion just poured out of him. And I was just overwhelmed. You know, I just kept looking at him, you know. And, you know, kept just giving pranams. And I just, as he was back in the van this way to leave, I just kept following the van, kept looking at him, just kept going like this. And I just still get chills thinking about that. That he has, that's that God's love coming through that form, even though the body seems like it's, and it is, broken down, but that love is still there, the compassion. It's just amazing. If you read his story, he totally devoted his life to serving mankind. I'll never forget that. This was when I was in Ramana Maharshi Ashram.
This is on the other side of South India, from Nagashanta on the west coast. This is on the closer to the east coast. So we switched here from ashrams. Nagashram to Ramana Ashram.
All Shiva.
Where Ramana Maharshi spent his majority of his life.
It's about, I took the train from Nanda Ashram. It takes about 13 hours. And then from there, I got to Katpadi, a little town called Katpadi. And then there's another two-hour drive to the ashram. And that ashram. David was talking about when you go on a pilgrimage, there are a lot of anxieties come up. And some fears too, because it's the fears of the unknown. You don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, just, so there's that anxiety. And Ramana Maharshi used to encourage all his sadhus to do pradakshina, which means walk around the mountain, on the inside or outside, because the mountain itself, he said that it was Shiva, and Shiva. If you go in there with the right state of mind, compel you to be even quieter, and the anxieties subside and the fears subside, completely go away. Part of my sadhana when I was there was to walk around the mountain on the inside. Every morning I'd get up about 4 in the morning and start walking at 5. There's a trail, and the first time I went around the mountain, I had to get a guide so I know where I was going. And after that, I went by myself with the light, because it was black, dark.
How long does it take you?
If I don't stop, which I did, 2 hours. It's about 7 kilometers, which which is about 8 miles on the inside. On the outside, it's 14 kilometers, which would be about 16 miles.
Can you define the outside inside a little bit?
Sure. The inside is mainly, you're just close to the mountain, to Arunachala. It's just a trail where you just the mountain's right there. It's almost like you feel like you're surrounded by it, because there's peaks and there's valleys of the mountain, and there's higher peaks, and one feels like you're almost surrounded. On the outside, there's nothing but temples. If you go around the street, which goes all the way around the town and comes out this way, there's nothing but Shiva temples, Hanuman temples, just Shiva, all Shiva. And as a matter of fact, on December 23rd, it was a full moon, and that's a very auspicious time for Indians, especially in that area. They come from all over India, from southern India, from Chennai, at least 100,000 from the early time of the day to the next morning. People just come and fill the streets on both sides. It looks like a wave of people emerging into the sea. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's like a mini Mecca. You know, I kept looking, and there was no end. On one side, the streets are filled with people going this way. On this side, they're going around this way. And I'm just watching. I'm going, this is amazing. You know, the devotion they have is incredible. It's
are they chanting as they walk?
No, yeah, some are. Mainly they're not. Mainly they're walking around. The story goes there are two things in India that Indians are highly of, and that's one is movies, and the other one is croquet. I mean, not croquet, but
cricket.
Very big in India. So the story goes, there's a famous Indian actor who did a movie, and in the movie, he said, if you walk around Arunachala and you put all your problems at Shiva's feet, Shiva would take care of them, would just eliminate them. And so people take that to heart, and, you know, it's a rough country, and it's a poor country, so people just, you know, believe that. And I'm sure to some degree it happens. If your heart's in the right place, those problems will be eliminated. You know, if you just think that he's going to do it his way, not your way, you're going to be okay. And that's, you know, that's part of the problem that I realize, that you have to just, you know, relax and allow him to do it the way he wants to, not the way I want to. And that was hard because there's certain things I didn't want, and they kept coming. Especially here, Shiva is, most of you know, is a transforms you, and is a destroyer of the ego. So there's a lot of pressure, and if you're not prepared, and I've seen this, and some people manifest a lot of anger, because it puts a lot of pressure on you that you either make changes and accept, or you reject and you get mad because you know one doesn't like the way things are. And it was an interesting experience. I spent 7 weeks here, and I was supposed to be back December 31st at Anandashram, and I kept extending it because for some reason I wasn't ready to go. But by the seventh week, I was ready. I was ready for some bhakti. I was ready for some chanting. I really was. I had enough burning. I had some. I needed some chanting. There's Anandashram. What a place! It is a holy mountain. It really is a holy mountain. Unfortunately, I don't have the pictures that I have here of Arunachala. When I first went up the mountain with the guide, which was wise, very wise, he told me, if we come up here again, I want to show you where the foot, Shiva's foot's on the mountain, actual foot on the mountain, made out of rock, you know, and his head is also there, and his hand. And I said, well, yeah, I'd like to go up. And at that time, I went with no shoes, and that was a bad idea. Going up was okay; it was fairly easy. I said, no, this is nothing, you know, because he told me, you want to see a Shiva cave? It's only be 15 minutes, and I was coming out of the Mamana Maharshi's cave, the upper cave. And I thought I was just going to pay a quick visit after my breakfast. I went up there, so I'll just pay a visit and come back down. He said, well, it'll be only 15 minutes. I said, oh, what's 15 minutes? Okay, let's go. Well, 15 minutes turned out to be 2 hours. And halfway up the mountain, and it started to rain. And I'm saying, oh, boy, it's not too bad going up. Coming down was bad. Coming down, because, you know, you have little pebbles, little rocks, and they're all like this. And I had a bruise on the right toe, and it got an infection, and I went to the doctor. He had to cut it out and give me a tetanus shot. But it was good that rain came for 5 days. It just, like a monsoon, it just poured for 5 days. For a moment, I thought I was in Seattle. No, really, I mean, it just rained hard every day. So that gave me time to heal, the toe to heal. And then I said, okay, he met me at the ashram, and we went up the mountain and took pictures of the foot and the head and the...
Why did you do it barefoot?
Well, because I thought, you know, 15 minutes, what's 15 minutes? It's 15 minutes, no big deal. And I left my sandals at the ashram, because at the ashram there's a certain area where you can't use the sandals. You can't walk anywhere in the ashram. So I had my sandals in my room, and I said, and I just, a thought came to me, said, well, why don't you just go visit the cave and then come back down? So I visited the cave, and this young, I'll say boy, because he looked like he was 15, but he was 21. He approached me and said, you know, when I see a Shiva cave, 15 minutes. And obviously he was looking for work. No problem, you know. No, yeah, exactly, no problem. And when they say no, if there is a problem, they say no problem. because they're overwhelmed with problems, so they say no problem. And he was looking for a job, basically. You know, that's his job. That's what he does. He's a guy. And I kept thinking about it, and I said, well, what's 15 minutes? But it was more like 2 hours, and it was more than halfway up the mountain. And eventually, I ended up going to the top as well, and it's an amazing mountain. Amazing mountain. What's that?
Maharshi always went here, but Indians do it.
Yeah, they say if you want to walk around Arunachalai, it's advised to go barefoot. He would say go barefoot, but but us Westerners' feet
are so. Also, it's considered a temple. Rama Maharshi considers the whole mountain to be.
It is. He said of Shiva itself, and it is. The Sanskrit translation for Arunachalai is Red Mount, and it does put out heat. It puts out heat, a lot of heat. And anyways, maybe for them, they're used to walking with no shoes, with no sandals, but I won't do it again.
Well, did you feel a certain presence?
I just felt calmness. That's how the trail is marked. See those white markings there? Mm-hmm. They mark them. The whole trail is marked. So they want you to stay on that trail. They don't want you to veer off to the right or left and get lost, you know. And they say there's spirits that don't want to be disturbed. But what I felt, the most thing that I felt was, as soon as I hit the trail, I was compelled to just went to quietness and stillness, and no anxieties, no fears, no worries. So it kind of helped my sadhana immensely. And so when I went back to my room, I would just go back to meditation, and that was pretty much the purpose of that. And there's ponds inside the production of the walking. That's one pond, and usually. You want to see the roads over here. You walk this way, kind of always clockwise. Always walk clockwise around the pond. Come back out this way, and you continue on the trail, because the universe revolves clockwise, and even the blood in your body and the body also, everything's clockwise. That's why they go clockwise. There's another pond there. There's another pond.
Is there any special benefit?
I suppose there's sadhus that were bathing in there. Yeah, I didn't bathe in there. Probably so. Yeah, it's probably holy water. I'm sure a lot of sadhus bathe. Probably Ramana Maharshi himself probably bathed in some of those ponds. Yeah, I think so. I didn't. I was more I was more captivated by the mountain itself. I just kept looking at it, and I just felt surrounded by it. And even though I wasn't surrounded by it, I felt I was surrounded by it. It's hard to express, but he's right about it. It's just something else. He never, throughout his whole life, after he left his house, he never left a mile away from Arunachalai. He was so if he was attached to anything, it was that mountain. And I think that's. Let's see. That's just Arunachalai. There's a stop this right here. That's a temple of Shiva's wife. It's
Parvati.
It's within the walk. It's on the side, and you walk to the side, and you walk up there, and there's the temple of Shiva's wife. It's amazing. There's the entrance. You know, and it just blows me away how they could built these temples many, many years ago with such detail. It's amazing. It's incredible. Some of these temples go back 1,000, 1,800 years old. Not this one, but the ones you'll see later. There's the trail. That's near the temple. The temple's over here. You come out of the temple. You get back on the trail on your way out. There's a nunchala again. See, there's the trail. The marker, the white on the right side. So you don't get off track. You don't get lost. Have a search party come out looking for you. Actually, they probably wouldn't know. That's towards the end of the walk that comes around into town.
Well, I guess if you're going at night too, it's really nice to have those white markings so you can lights
can
pick them up.
Yeah, and have a flashlight with you. But by the time you get halfway, the sun starts to come up.
But I imagine some people.
Oh yeah, yeah, they do. They do because they want to be alone. They don't want anybody walking there. You want to be alone when you do this. That's the biggest benefit, to be by yourself if you can. There's a pond again. There's about 3 or 4 ponds within the walk in that one temple, and that's all there is on the inside. And of course, on Anchala, that's on the way out.
Is that a dog?
Oops, I hit the wrong one. I think it was a goat.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, this is Ramana Maharshi's ashram. That's somebody, samadhi. See the date there? 1953, absorbed in Arunachala. Mm-hmm. Disciple Ramana Maharshi. That's part of the ashram there. Some women. Dog. That's the entrance of, well, not the entrance, but the Ramana Maharshi's shrines on the left-hand side. And Mother Shrines, which is right next to his, right on the left-hand side. And that's the view you get when you walk in the ashram, is Arunachala. There's Victoria.
She's a young woman.
Oh, this
one.
Now, she's from Nanda Ashram. I met her at Ananda Ashram, and she came to Ramana Maharshi after I got there. This is one of my favorite pictures right here. These are real sadhus. I mean, I asked them if they would pose for me, and they were glad to pose. They like to have pictures taken of them, and I really enjoy this picture. Yeah, look, he's just happy, you know? And I gave him some rupees after that. You know? They weren't asking for any, but I gave it to him. So I gave him some. And this is Mother's temple, and on occasion on Fridays they have groups that come in and play. The president has kind of he's kind of altered his approach now. He's allowing people to come in and play on Fridays. This was a nice women's group that played there. It was really, really nice. He does that on occasion.
Well, is it easy to get a place to stay at this ashram?
Yeah, if you have to make arrangements ahead of time. Usually, this was a very busy time because Ramana Maharshi's birthday fell on the 25th of December, based on his birth star. Every year it changes.
Oh.
Same thing with Papa. It's not always on December 25th, but it's in December. And it was packed. But Ananda Ashram helped me out in a way because they sent an email ahead of time and said that I wanted to stay there for 5 days, and they gave me the dates, and I was able to stay there for 5 days. And they extended it for 2 days. They won't go more than 7 or 8 max if it's a busy time. They won't give you more than that.
Sometimes 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Namashram, really. They have very good relationships between Namashram
and Ramana. Well, Mataji worked with Ramana Maharshi's ashram for many years because they were going through some rough times. But, I wanted to stay there the whole time at the ashram, but it just wasn't possible because you have access to the old hall, the shrines.
So where were you staying the rest of the time?
I was staying in a room about 2 or 3 blocks from the ashram. So I would do my walk in the morning and in the afternoon sometimes, and they have a closing ceremony at 6:45 where the women and men chant, and I would go there and
Is it very expensive?
Oh, no. Well, not at all. It cost me, where I was staying at that room, cost me, and it had a shower, it had a Western toilet, and it had a little tiny balcony, about 200 rupees a day, which is,
$5.
Is it five? Mm-hmm. Yeah, about $5 a day. And I was there for over a month. So it gives you an idea how hard it is there. There's a, this is something else. That's, he's getting the rice paddy field ready and still doing it the way they did thousands of years. I took a picture. I just, wow, I was just couldn't believe it. Look, they're getting the rice fields ready.
What kind of cows?
Sorry?
What kind of cows?
They're bulls. Those are oxes.
Oh.
See, I just caught myself. Every time I go to India, I pick up a new phrase from Swami Muktananda. I mean, they're nice. He's got one I'm using right now. I told David that he says double up. You know, when you want to intensify your practice or whatever that may be, and you're going through a struggle, he'll say double up, put out more effort.
And a marvelous thing.
Double up. And then he's got another one that says don't get stuck. You know, just keep, don't get stuck, whatever you do, don't get stuck. He's funny. And now, of course, the famous one is no problem. Even though there is a problem, they say no problem. whatever. Yeah, to get him, yeah. He's. I think he, once he saw me taking pictures, I think he was kind of like, you know,
showing off
a little bit. Yeah, he was showboating a little bit. Yeah, see, he knows I'm checking the pictures, so. Hey, I'm on camera, you know.
Good pictures.
Yeah.
They're beautiful people.
Yeah, they are. But, you know, there's some stuff about India that I didn't particularly like. One of those is, if you ever go to India, those of you who haven't been there, if you hear a horn beeping, you better get out of the way. Because they have the right of way and you don't. Literally, they just lean on the horn and they fly. It means you better look and you better be very careful because they're going to keep coming. That and at the Ananda Ashram, I don't know what, it was bothering me at first. Some people would butt in line. You remember that one guy? Just... You remember that, Larry? Larry and I were in the front of Papa's room. We were ready to go in. And this one guy, and he wasn't an old guy, he was a young guy. You know, he just walked right in and just cut right in front. And they do that a lot. And it started to bother me, but then eventually I just said, forget it. That's just the way it is. Accept it.
Was it Sarge there to keep the
order? No, Sarge, he does it himself. No, Sarge gave me a hard time, but I still like him. The first time I went there, you know how sometimes he'll approach you and he'll say, he'll have a little notepad, and he'll ask you, well, how much time are you going to spend
chanting?
And then he approached me and he said, I want you to spend an hour in each, the silent one. And I said, we'll see. And then he backed off a little bit. So when I came back from Ramana Maharshi's ashram, everything was real nice, very quiet for a long time. And I'm saying, oh, good. He's staying away. Good. Wrong. He came, approached me. He said, you know, Rahul, I want you to stay, go out to the temple of the at least an hour every day. I said, wait a minute. That's not my sadhana. You know, I have my sadhana. You have yours. I went like this, you know, come. No. I have my sadhana. He said, oh, but that is sadhana. I said, yes, but that's your sadhana. That's not my sadhana. And then from that point on, he stayed away and he didn't talk to me that much. But
who is he?
Sarge? He's like an usher. No.
Is he self-appointed? Or
no. He's sort of.
He has official duties.
And he gets carried away a little bit. You know, he takes his job a little bit too serious. He kind of makes sure that everything, but he does a good job in some respects. Like that aisles are clear, people, the women can walk around on the flower offering to Papa's during the morning, make sure that the aisles are clear. He does a good job, but sometimes he takes it a bit too serious.
It's like Chinnaswamy. Chinnaswamy with Ramana Maharshi, you know,
he always...
Yeah.
Yeah. Around, Maharshi just let him do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Pardon me?
Oh, let's continue with the slideshow. Thank you.
Yeah, and there's the rice fields again. There's the nonchala. See the light on top? That they do that the month of December for 11 days. In India you got to really investigate. You get different stories. I was told that they have a barrel, and they maneuver it close to the top, and they put ghee inside the barrel, which is butter melted, which makes the flame burn a lot longer. So when the time comes, you can see the light move slowly to the top. At sunset, they move the light to the top and have a lot of people at the walkway chanting Om Shiva while the sun is setting. For 11 days straight, you do that. It's a big ritual. It goes way back. They do that every year for 11 days. At sunset, the light, the beacon on top of the mountain. So...
December 23rd, full moon, is that...
No, that was that was from end of January to about December 3rd is when it ended. The lighting.
The end of December to January 3rd.
No, it was end of January to December 3rd. 23rd was the full moon. That's when they walk around the mountain. I mean, around the street. This is a temple, Shiva's temple. Is there where I can zoom this in, Larry?
There is on the other control, but it's probably not working.
No, okay, we'll just keep going this way. I showed this to Dave, and this was taken from the top of the mount, from the top of Varnachala. Those are the four pillars of Shiva. Those temples, I asked around, I got confirmation from two different people that wanted to make sure they're at least 1,800 years old. The Shiva temples. And when you go inside, I think those of you who've been inside, you've seen them. It's just amazing how fine detail they're carved, Ganesh and Shiva. What happened here? Let's see. Oh, here we go. Whoa. That's, I believe that's Vishnu. Yeah. That's Vishnu and his two wives. You know, this temple here, this Indian was showing me around. He was explaining all these figures. And I was kind of joking with him. I said, you know, how can a god have two wives? I said, do you have two wives? He said, no, I have just one wife. I said, yeah, two wives. One wife is hard enough. You know, it's tough enough to have one wife. How can you have two wives? It's not right. But I'm sure it means something else. I don't know. But that's Vishnu. Oh, man, look at that. Look at that work. I don't know how old this temple is, but it's got to be hundreds of years. And that's Shiva. I mean, Vishnu. The three heads of Vishnu, I believe. Yeah, I think that's Vishnu. I don't know who that is, but that's in the same temple. They won't allow you to take photographs inside the temple, which is just as well. The outside is better anyways. And I believe that's Hanuman. Hanuman's temple right across the street. But all these temples, if you can just visualize for a minute, like take any street like Lake City Way, you would have temples almost on each block on both sides. And that's why they walk around. It's very devotional. There's a Swami I met. Oh, this is really nice. This temple here, this one is at least 1,000 years old. That's Shiva, excuse me, with his wife and the ox.
The bull, Nandi, the bull.
Yeah. That's their vehicle. They have they call them vehicles. Ganesh is a, oddly enough, is a mouse. And Vishnu is a eagle. And that's all I know right now. It's Lingam. No, it's not Lingam. I don't know who they are. They're Shiva. This temple here is all Shiva. And they show, there's the actual Shiva wedding ceremony here. You'll see it in a minute. There, I think that's it right there, yeah. There's Shiva on your left. And there's his wife performing a marriage ceremony. And some yogis, see the yogis at the bottom in a lotus position. And David was telling me a story. It was fascinating how Ganesh got his head. can you tell him real quick?
I think we'll tell that another time.
Another time, yeah. It was something else. Each god has his beautiful, great story, you know, like Ram and Sita and Lakshman and Hanuman. It's like, wow. It just depends where you want to go with it, who you want to worship, what aspect of God you want to worship. There's another temple. This is Papa's cave near Ananda Ashram.
You may remember from Papa's story that he went to Ramana Maharshi and just sat with him for maybe 5 minutes. Ramana looked very deeply into his eyes. And he felt a great transformation as a result. Papa went up into a cave on this mountain, Arunachala, and spent, I believe it was 21 days, chanting there. And when he came out, he had the universal vision. He saw God in all creation. He saw a man walking down that trail that Rahul was showing us. And Papa went running after him to chase him because to him, this is God in human form here. The man turned around and saw this wild sadhu running after him. He took off and started running. Papa caught him, embraced him, and said, "You are none other but God himself." And he realized that Papa wasn't insane. He was in this uplifted state of consciousness. So this is the cave where Papa had gone to chant for the...
Yeah. I think he was ripe on the tree. He was ready to fall and... Ramana Maharshi just looked at him, and Papa said his whole body trembled like a leaf. Just his whole body just trembled, and that was the rest is.
In contrast, Swami Vishwananda, as a young boy, 17, 18 years old, he went to Ramana Maharshi. He was there for over a month. Ramana Maharshi didn't look at him the whole time. So Papa was that ripe fruit.
Yeah, you still know about Ramana Maharshi, you know.
The other cave.
Yeah, this is the one where you spend like 24
this
hours there.
This is where Papa, I spent overnight here. So. This is where Papa wrote his In Quest of God.
Yeah, I was, I spent a couple hours there and I was taking pictures and then I was starting to meditate and it was getting really nice, but some kids from, there's a school nearby, came in and kind of disrupted, but that was okay. Yeah. The kind of I heard a humming noise in my head. This was at the Ramana Maharshi. He wanted me to take a picture of him with his cat. Wanted me to send this to him, which I haven't done yet, but I will. This was a Swami who was his burial site. Who dropped his body at the following day of Christmas, December 26th in the morning, I found his body. He's 95 years old. And he used to sit, there's a doorway between Ramana Maharshi's samadhi and Mother's samadhi, and he would sit right here. Here's the entrance, and he would sit right here every day at 6:45, closing. And, you can barely see, you can barely hear, and to see a man, 95, it's like, yeah, the current president's father, and I witnessed the ritual, the burying ritual, which is amazing.
You saw him before he passed on?
Yeah, I used to see him. I saw him a few nights, and I'd go up to him and just touch his feet like that, show some reverence and respect. And when I went to the ashram, there were a whole bunch of people gathered around, and it was very quiet. I knew something odd. There was no noise. There were just people gathered around the walkway. And so I went over there and looked around. I kept seeing what was going on, and I saw a head. And he was facing, they put him facing Arnanchala. And I saw his head, and I knew right away when I saw his head what happened. You know, he dropped the body, and they had him in a design chair made out of bamboo, sitting in a lotus, wearing his orange robes. And they had a Brahmin priest sitting in front of him, and his father over here. They had fruit, and they were squeezing lemon, lime, coconut milk on his head, facing Arnanchala. Basically, it was puja for Arnanchala. And that was going on for about an hour. They would chant, this Brahmin priest would just chant, and they would throw pebbles on his body. That just went on for about an hour, and then they carried him. You can't see it, but they carried him over here. That pit was already ready. I mean, they probably knew it was, any time now or any year, month or whatever. And they lowered him into this pit. The slabs there weren't there yet, so they lower him into the pit. They throw rice in the pit, sand and some rock, and that's all. And then they lower him into the pit. While he's in the pit, they make sure the head is centered. Because after that, they put the concrete slabs over the pit, because the lingam is going to go right over his head. Right, like, see where that lingam is at? This head is right there, underneath. This head is...
How deep is the pit?
I don't know. I couldn't see. Deep enough, I guess, for him to lower him all the way down, without the chair, I think. They lowered him all the way down to the ground, brought in the slabs, put the slabs over, and then right here, there would be that Brahmin priest would be sitting right in front, and they'd be chanting, and this went on for 13 days.
It's traditional in India for a yogi or a swami to be buried like that, sitting in lotus. That's how they did with Sri Yukteswar as well, and lower him down the end. All other people would be cremated, but they were buried. And the reason, once you enter into the Swami order or as a yogi, you've purified your body already. And so cremation is considered a purification, right? So an ordinary person will be cremated, but they are buried and preserved in that way.
And I believe I was told that Swamiji helped get his colors, those sannas, mm-hmm. just back in 1991. So it was late in life when he became a Swami, obviously, because, he was 95 then, and that was 2000, just last year.
A little
time?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
then I think that's...
Hospital. If we want to do Ananda Ashram next week, we could do that.
Okay. I don't have pictures, though, of Ananda Ashram.
Okay.
This is the last one?
Yeah.
Well, that's the last picture. Okay.
Yeah. I hope I didn't go too fast. There's so much is going through me, memories, and I'm trying to remember what happened.
That's a wonderful presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So if you ever go to India, those of you who haven't been to India, just let me know, and I can set things up for you if you like. That's it. Thank you. Okay.
So just as a closing prayer, let us chant Om three times and then Amen three times.
Amen.
Any blessings for each one of your pilgrimages in your own life to go from day to day. May you be lifted up in consciousness, feel the peace, endure the fire, and come into that state of complete realization.